I'm in favor of kids being able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. If they can make some money doing something, I'm all for it. They deserve it. Second part of that is I think Manhattan is a home run for name, image, and likeness. We are the main story in town, Kansas State University and our athletic department, and our kids are out in the community at all of our sports. And so if a kid comes to Manhattan, everybody's going to know him in that community, and he's going to have a lot of opportunities. So for kids that thinking you have to go to the big market areas, I disagree. I think Manhattan's a gold mine for NIL.
Chris Klieman, head coach of the Kansas State Wildcat football team at Big 12 Media Days this week, saying that, hey, Manhattan's a great place for players to come here, and we're the big man on campus is what he's basically saying. And in town, and he's right. Look at the big football stadium that was built once K-State was successful in football. And we know that that's where most of the money is in regards to athletic departments made in college football, especially at the Power Five institutions. And so Chris Klieman's saying, hey, name, image, likeness, you can do it here in Manhattan. You don't have to go to, I'm inserting names in the blank, Alabama, mm-hmm. you know, places like that, or even Oklahoma. You can go to Kansas State and make money and do this with your name, image, likeness. Some interesting comments there from Chris Klieman. Big 12 Media Days, some of the topics are discussed. Of course, Oklahoma is a heavy favorite to win the Big 12 title again. They've won the last six Big 12 championships, but yet to get past the semifinals in the college football playoff era, they are betting favorites, according to some, to win the national title this year, which that'd be great. But I always say, I don't know, until they play defense better. At times they've improved in that area, but still that's always the question for me. Another topic, of course, is the rising stock of Matt Campbell, and he's been asked about why he hasn't left for bigger jobs, and he says, you know, we're building something here at Iowa State. Coaches offered support for name, image, and likeness. We heard Chris Klieman just a moment ago. Gary Patterson, TCU, says that this could be very beneficial for the players. He doesn't seem to have a big problem with it. Big 12 is bullish on the 12-team playoff. Of course they are. They don't have to worry about who's your true champion. They both could be in the playoff mm-hmm. if you have a 12-team playoff. And probably the biggest thing that's come out of the Big 12 Media Days is Bob Bowlesby's comments about COVID-19, basically saying that technically you're not going to be, you know, punished for not being vaccinated, but he does say it's short-sighted to not get vaccinated. If indeed the variant is as infectious as it is reported to be, not getting vaccinated is rolling the dice. As a student athlete, you're also rolling the dice on whether you're going to participate. You'll be tested. There's also was asked Bob Bowlesby about what if players have, you know, if teams have issues with COVID-19, so forth and so on, we have to cancel, postpone games. And basically, what he was saying is, no, you're going to forfeit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, get your – and you know what? I don't have a problem with that, because that puts a lot of pressure on the teams and the organizations and the players to say, listen, if you want to play, get your ducks in a row. These are our rules. And people can argue the rules all they want. We've talked about this before. You can argue the rules all you want, but the organization has the right to make their own rules. The Big 12 Conference is going to try to come down on taunting. So we'll see how that is assessed officiating-wise. I think I have my reservations on that. But they have a right to crack down on taunting. The SEC doesn't want to. The Big 12 can, you know. I don't know what the SEC's plans are on taunting, but if the Big 12 wants to crack down on it, they can. If a conference wants to say you must be vaccinated or you will be tested if you're not vaccinated, and listen, if you have too many positive tests and you guys don't have enough to play, that's going to hurt the rest of your teammates by not getting vaccinated. Well, that's your choice. And, yeah. You know, that's one of the things that people talked about with the College Baseball World Series. NC State wasn't as serious about the vaccination stuff as some of the other teams. Their manager didn't seem to be very pushy about it. And there are people that have come to the defense of the NCAA and saying, listen, these were the rules, and you had people that didn't get vaccinated, and so thus you made yourself prone to what happened. You had to forfeit a baseball game in the College World Series that ended your season. However, there are reports, of course, that vaccinated players still were positive too, and so forth and so on. So there's discrepancies as to how the players were tested. The point being is that the NCAA makes their rules. Major League Baseball makes their rules. NBA makes their rules. NFL makes their rules. And the Big 12, each conference can have their own set of rules in regards to how we're going to officiate things in the Big 12 conference in regards to taunting, whether we're going to stress the taunting part and make sure we crack down on that, if we're gonna, what we're going to handle in regards to COVID-19. So that's the power that they have, because if you want to play for a Big 12 institution and be on a full-ride scholarship, you probably need to play by their rules. Now, some of the rules, of course, have been archaic in regards to name, image, and likeness, and that's opened up the Pandora's box of now players athletes being able to make money off their name, image, and likeness, which, you know, it's a free market society, and that's probably long overdue, to be quite honest. How it impacts college athletics down the line, I have no idea. Nobody really does. They can act like they know, but they don't. And if you do, then you need to go to the lottery. You need to pick your lottery numbers because you can predict the future. So it is interesting, some of the things that were said at Big 12 Media Days, but a lot of support by the coaches for name, image, and likeness. And I think the biggest thing I take out of the Big 12 Media Days is that you kind of better have your ducks in a row when it comes to COVID-19, because we're not going to cut this slack. We're going to reschedule this, reschedule that, reschedule this, reschedule that, postpone that. It's going to be what it's going to be. And to me, that creates a sense of urgency for the players and the coaches and the organization, because there's a lot of money at stake. So I guarantee you universities are saying, you know, Gene Taylor or people even higher than Gene Taylor at K-State, or, you know, higher than Travis Goff of KU, are saying, listen, get it done, because we don't want to lose money by not having a football game in Lawrence or a football game in Manhattan. Let's get it done. We don't want to lose out on that or take a loss and a forfeit and possibly prevent us from being in a bowl game. You know, don't do that. And so that funnels down to the AD, funnels down to the coach, and guess where that funnels down? To the players.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with it, because the Big 12 and any other conference has the right to set their own rules or say, listen, we highly encourage you to do this, and if you don't, there could be repercussions and consequences, and don't tell us that we didn't warn you. I have no problem with that.
No, I mean, I think that's how you have to go about it, right?
Yeah.
If that's kind of the common, that's the common theme, is that, you know, get vaccinated and we can still do some of these things, then yeah, I think that's probably the way the Big 12 should go about it. Say, hey, you know, again, we're not forcing your hand. We're not taking you in there to get the shots.
You still have a choice not to, but there are repercussions if you don't.
If you don't, yeah, there's. You might be losing some games and losing an opportunity to play in the college football playoff, too. So, yeah, I don't think that's a bad way to go about it at all. In fact, I think I would think most conferences, organizations are going to have that same kind of line that says, hey, we're not forcing you, but
right,
it would behoove you to do it.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what they're saying, no doubt about it. Okay, another football note, Trev Alberts, new athletic director at Nebraska, as we talked about last few days, 5-year contract, paid $800,000 per year. His previous contract at UNO, Nebraska Omaha, was $255,000, so he almost tripled. Actually, he did triple his salary. Hey, would you like to come from UNO to Nebraska and be your athletic director? A lot of pressure. Yeah, it is. We'll give you 3 times the amount of money you're making at UNO. Okay, sold. Wow, that's a gigantic raise. All right, local sports. Baseball was not played last night in some cases. In other cases, there was. Dusty, update you on that. And the Chad McDaniel races did take place last night. I heard them buzzing around in Beloit.
Yeah, after rainout Wednesday, the 10th running of the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race in Beloit, Sullivan Valley Raceway Thursday, USAC Nas Energy Drink National Midget Feature, Tanner Thorson from Minden, Nevada, came away with his first Chad McDaniel Memorial victory. After a red flag late in the race, it was a green-white checker where Thorson ended up getting a shootout win to the finish, and the win marked the third of the season for Thorson, the USAC Midget National season. For more information on the race, you can check out usacracing.com. Again, Chad McDaniel Memorial Race last night in Beloit. As Wade said, K18 East Regional Tournament semifinals were postponed from Thursday, and they've been moved to today. What they're going to do is play the semis on 2 fields, and then they'll finish out third-place consolation and championship games following those games on 2 fields tonight as well. So everything is scheduled to finish up tonight in Concordia. Concordia CMB takes on Clifton Clatt approximately 6 o'clock, at 6 o'clock, and so will Clay Center and Smith Center. Red will play at 6 o'clock as well, and then approximately 25 minutes following those games will be the consolation and championship games. You can find the brackets for the K18 East Regional at ncksports.com. Also, the Kansas State Pee Wee District tournaments are going on right now. In Cortland last night, Concordia Chevys won over Concordia Legion 2-1, and Pike Valley beat the Beloit Lake Monsters 3-2. So that sets up third place, the Beloit Lake Monsters against Concordia Legion at 6:30. Pike Valley will take on Concordia Chevys at 8 for the championship. District 2 at Osborne, Wakanda winning 6-1 over Osborne. And Smith Center beat Concordia Knights of Columbus 10-5. So third place, Concordia Knights of Columbus takes on Osborne at 6:30 in Osborne tonight. And then the championship, Smith Center against Wakanda at 8 o'clock. The top 3 teams in each of these brackets move on to the Kansas State Pee Wee Tournament next week. I believe it was being held by Clifton and Clyde, but the top three will move on, and then you can find more information at the Kansas State Pee Wee Association Facebook page a little bit later this morning. We'll have those brackets fully updated at ncksports.com as well. So that's a look at what's going on in local sports here today. Baseball this evening for K-18 and Pee Wee.
All right. The Royals are going to return to the field. Speaking of baseball, 36-53, last place in American League Central. They'll host the Baltimore Orioles, who have the worst record in American League. So a battle of the cellar dwellers, 7-10 tonight, first of three. And somehow, someway, after an all-star break, the Royals don't know who their starting pitcher is for tonight. That is astounding to me. How do you not know who your starting pitcher is tonight?
5 days, well, 4.5 days by the time you get up there.
It's pretty simple. Who's your best pitcher?
I know. It's like,
to me, that's Danny Duffy. He should be the starter tonight.
It's just like, okay.
I'll check if anything has changed, but as of an hour or so ago, it to be determined. Yeah, Royals to be determined, and then tomorrow to be determined. So if I go to game tomorrow, I have no idea who's going to be pitching yet. And then Sunday afternoon to be determined. The Orioles, they at least know who their pitcher is tonight, and they don't know the next two nights. Okay. So, yeah, Royals and the Orioles. First of three tonight at Coppin Stadium. The Royals go on the road to Milwaukee. Major League Baseball dealing with COVID-19 again. The Yankees and the Red Sox are scheduled to kick off the second half of the season last night. They're the only game on the schedule. But it was postponed because the Yankees have another round of COVID-19 issues following positive COVID-19 tests within the New York Yankees organization. Their game last night between the Yankees and the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium postponed to allow for continued testing and contact tracing. And Major League Baseball continue to provide updates as they go along. They have not yet determined if it's necessary to postpone tonight's game between the Yankees and Red Sox, though that could change as more information becomes available. General Manager Brian Cashman told reporters on Thursday afternoon that the Yankees have three positive cases and three that are pending. So we shall see how it all works out in regards to Major League Baseball. Brian Cashman said most of the six players were previously vaccinated.
Yeah.
That's an interesting nugget.
Yeah, it's that's the next thing that's just going to be weird about all of it is how do they approach all that, right? Mm-hmm. They're already vaccinated, so what? How do you move forward with that?
In California, they are re-implementing their mask mandates indoors, and it doesn't matter if you're vaccinated or not. Mm. And so now I start to say, what was the point of being vaccinated? But there are benefits, because at least what we're told is that there's a low chance that you're going to get COVID-19 if you're vaccinated. It's not a 0% chance, but there is a low chance. But if you do get it, it'll be typically less serious than had you not been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Rich Eisen of ESPN, NFL Network, not ESPN, but it used to be ESPN, NFL mm-hmm. Network, did you see him? He was double vaccinated, and he has COVID again. But he put it out there very strongly to everybody to see. He goes, this is not a political statement. He says, I've been told by all the people in the know in the health care profession, my doctors, my nurses, that had I not been vaccinated, I'd be going through much worse symptoms and situation right now mm-hmm. than I am currently. So he said, please get vaccinated. So even though your immediate reaction might be, well, I don't want to get vaccinated because, well, here we go. It's not, I mean, people are vaccinated and getting it, so what's the point of me getting vaccinated? You actually are going to improve your chances of not having as bad of a case of COVID, or it'll help you prevent getting COVID by having the vaccinations. That's the information that's out there. You can take it for what it's worth, and you can decide whether you want to get vaccinated or not. Yeah. It is a free country. You do have that choice. As of now, 48% of Americans are fully vaccinated, which means one out of every two. So, and we got ball games, people next to each other doing this, doing that. We got to live our lives. I know I'm tired of COVID. I know you're tired of COVID. I know everybody probably in the world is tired of COVID. But we seem to be going backwards in a few steps here with the Delta variant and so forth and so on. So it's your choice. And I always tell people, don't listen to necessarily what I or Dusty or some politician tells you. Listen to the actual people in the field that know what they're talking about, or at least you trust. I'm talking doctors and nurses, people locally that you know. Maybe you have a friend that's a doctor or a nurse. Talk to those people. You know, gather information. Do some research if you need to, if you're unsure whether to be vaccinated or not. That's my advice to
you.
That's
the key for me, is talk to the people you trust.
Yes.
Your doctors.
Yeah. Don't sit here and tell me you trust a politician.
You know, Fauci can say whatever he wants to say. You might not trust him, right? But if your doctor tells you, yeah, do it. And that's the approach that I took with the vaccination, right? Mm-hmm. I had to ask my rheumatologist because of the underlying conditions that I have to make sure that this wasn't going to mess me up, right? Mm-hmm. And I trust that guy with my life. He's gotten me from not being hardly able to stand up and walk to where I am today. Yeah. So I trust him with my life. He said, absolutely get it. So that's what I did. Now, again, that's not a political statement from me. That's not me telling you to get it. It's telling you to trust.
First of all, the fact that we have to, this is what's sad about our country. The fact that you have to just say what you just said.
Yeah.
The fact you have to preface and say, this is not a political statement about whether I got vaccinated or didn't get vaccinated. There should be nothing political about it.
That's where we're at right now, though.
That's so sad and pathetic, quite frankly. It's your choice. If you choose to vaccinate, you should. And if you choose not to be vaccinated, that's your right and privilege and prerogative. That's fine, too. Repercussions for anything that you put in your body. We know that, right? Whether it's drugs, alcohol, nicotine, whether it's a shot, whatever else it may be. But let's not sit here and say, well, it's just so sad that we got prefaced by saying, this is not a political statement, but I got vaccinated or I haven't been vaccinated. Like, oh, my God, if we got to keep doing this, we're going the wrong direction in this world, in this country. And obviously, I think we are. That's my personal opinion, because we shouldn't have to say that type of thing. But that's you and me have had to
say
that.
I want to say it because, you could be backlash like, oh, they told us we have to get vaccinated. We didn't.
No, we just said you can get educated and you can make your own
decision. But, yeah, that's for me is just trusting who's taking care of you.
Yeah.
And not listening to even, just like all the national doctors that are talking about it. Just
talk to your people.
And people you trust. Yes. And I think that's how we should make most all of our decisions.
And they'll be very honest with you.
Yeah.
All right, so we continue on the COVID theme here. Team USA's scheduled pre-Olympic exhibition game against Australia for tonight has been canceled due to health and safety concerns. USA Basketball announced the news last night on a statement on Twitter. Out of an abundance of caution, USA Men's National Team exhibition versus Australia tonight or Friday has been canceled. USA Women's National Team's matchup with Australia will be played at 1:30 this afternoon on NBC Sports Network. Earlier in the day, USA Basketball announced that Washington Wizards star guard Bradley Beal will not participate in the Olympics after he was placed in the health and safety protocols. In addition, Detroit Pistons forward Jeremy Grant has also been entered into the protocols, though he is still expected to travel to Tokyo later this month. A replacement for Beal has not yet been announced. Here's Greg Popovich on the plans going forward to get to Tokyo.
Our goal overall is we're trying to get everybody safely to Tokyo and at the same time prepare a basketball team to be successful. So it's all we can do is just be as vigilant and careful as we possibly can to give everybody the best chance to get there safely. It's as simple as that.
It is. That is very simple. So then the question is, and it's a bummer, Bradley Beal. He has always wanted to play for his country. It's been a dream of his. And they don't even say he's positive. We don't know if he's positive or what. But he won't be a part of the Olympics now. And he's a key player to this team.
Mm-hmm.
So things get tougher for the USA basketball team. And so now the question is, who will replace him on the team? There are different people that could be candidates. Remember, they're shorthanded. No Chris Middleton, no Drew Holiday, and no Devin Booker because they're still playing NBA Finals. More on that in a moment. Julius Randle could be a candidate. Tobias Harris, Duncan Robinson, Christian Wood of the Rockets. And then one of the ones that would really stand out to people would be Trae Young. The only true point guard on the roster right now is Damian Lillard. So Trae Young could be a nice addition to the Olympic team and probably be in pretty decent shape yet since they finished up here recently. And that's the thing that Popovich was saying is, I want somebody that's in condition and ready to go. We don't have time to get you into shape.
Yeah.
So to me, that would, if I'm looking at this, I'd be sitting here going, Trae Young would be a pretty obvious choice. But we'll see.
Yeah. Did you see his tweet yesterday?
Who, Trae?
He put out the video of Isaiah Thomas saying, I don't know what went into those selections, but I met the criteria, but I wasn't selected.
Oh, really?
And that was obviously aimed at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's disappointed and saying, hey, you had your chance, I'm not going to play for you. I don't know.
I don't know
how that's going to work. But that was interesting that he put that out.
I did not see that. All right, Game 5 of the NBA Finals tomorrow night, 8 o'clock in Phoenix on ABC. Dusty and I both picked the Suns to win this series in 6, which means we both must pick the Suns to win tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Unless we're going to change our minds. I do think the Suns are in a little bit of trouble here. I'm very concerned about the Suns. However, I'm going to just hope that the home court advantage will be the cure of all the ills. They could have easily won the last game. They had lots of turnovers. They didn't. They were a lot of iso ball with Booker, and Paul didn't play well. And by the way, something I left out that I meant to mention yesterday on the show, even though Drew Holiday was 4 of 20 from the floor, he had a huge impact on that game
mm-hmm.
because he had a key offensive rebound. And the other thing, too, is that he pressured Paul coming up the floor, and that might have something to do with Paul's struggles with Drew Holiday's defense. He's a very good defender. And I kind of wondered that in the Lakers series when Chris Paul was basically one-handed with a bad shoulder and the Lakers weren't pressuring bringing up the floor, which made no sense to me. Which to me is bad coaching. I mean, that's just, how do you not see that? And it's like it took us all the way to the NBA Finals to finally figure out he's 36. We might want to try to wear him down. I mean, it's a brilliant move, and it's not, well, I don't even know if it's brilliant. It's just smart. It's kind of in the duh category for me. As long as you got a guard that can stay in front of him. And Drew Holiday obviously can do that. But here's a really good one. This is coming from ESPN. They had them, or ABC, whatever. They have mic'd up in the locker rooms after the games, and we've seen Mike Budenholzer, the head coach of the Bucks, Monty Williams of the Suns. And I like seeing some of that. Gives you a little bit of a inside look at the locker room before or after a game. Here's Monty Williams, what he had to say, the Phoenix Suns head coach, after the Bucks beat the Suns in Game 4 the other night, which evened the series at 2-2, with the Suns going back for Game 5 tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on ABC in Phoenix. Here's Monty Williams addressing his team.
Let me tell you something. All of this is correct. We're in this situation right now because we put ourselves in this situation. I mean, in a good way. We got 3 games to win 2. That's how you got to look at it. You can't have your heads down right now. You got to stay together. That's the deal. What happened tonight is correctable. 17 offensive rebounds they got, 17 turnovers we had. Think about that, guys. We had a 21-point fourth quarter. We're making it hard on ourselves, okay? But we can't have our heads down. It's emotionally tough. But we got to know we put ourselves in this position. We got home court advantage. You got to keep your spirit high. That's the deal. Ever since I've been here, we talked about everything you want is on the other side of hard. This is hard. This is freaking hard. So you got to stick together. That's the deal. All right? Let's bring it in. Come on, guys.
I'm going to replay a piece of this that I just played to reiterate what I'm trying to get across here.
Ever since I've been here, we talked about everything you want is on the other side of hard. This is hard.
Everything you want is on the other side of hard. I love that quote.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote. It's like, listen, you can work hard. That doesn't mean you're going to be successful. It's beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen, here we go. It's beyond hard. We knew it'd be hard to win an NBA title. All we got to do is win 2 of the next 3. It's right here before us. And 2 of those 3 are in Phoenix, by the way, which you didn't even mention. And it's all correctable. He's right. 17 turnovers, that's a lot for an NBA team. 17 offensive rebounds. Usually when you talk about offensive rebounding, it's because one team is just clearly taller and bigger and more physical, or it's effort. And I think there are times where the Bucks provide a little extra effort. Connaughton had a huge offensive rebound. I mentioned Drew Holiday. These guys aren't 6'11 like Giannis.
No.
Getting offensive rebounds. And that usually, honestly, ties into playing on your home floor.
Yeah.
A little bit of extra energy helps you get those 50-50 balls. And Bill Self said this for years, and many coaches do, that the difference in games between two teams are evenly matched usually comes down to who gets the most 50-50 balls. And I'll be honest with you. I've watched our high school basketball team with some summer traveling basketball. I've seen a traveling team that my son's on playing, and we've gone to different towns. Both of those teams, and obviously those are the only ones I watch along with the teams that are playing us. But it is very interesting when there is a ball loose on the floor. I've noticed both the teams are hesitant to dive and get after the ball and get on the floor, and other teams that we play against do, and they usually get rewarded, whether it's a tie-up and the arrow goes their way, or they call a timeout. And so I've seen kids on both teams that I've been watching that have, not that they're not trying, it's just that they're a little bit more hesitant to dive on the floor and go after that 50-50 ball, whereas the other team is not. And when you get to college and get into really serious high school or serious traveling ball, you get into college and obviously get into pros. Listen, if you're not willing to dive on the floor and get after it, that could be the difference in a game. Could be the difference between winning a championship and not, is getting on the floor and diving to help your team win in any which way you can. Certain kids are willing to dive on the floor and put their body at risk a little bit, and other kids are just not going to do it no matter what. Men too. I talk about kids, but men too in the NBA. But it is pretty impressive when guys will get after it and dive on the floor for loose balls and not worry about getting hurt, because that's the competitor. That's the, I'm going to get that ball. That's my ball. And I know coaches work on it. I know we did way back in the day. We had drills, and I didn't like them. But we had drills where they'd roll a ball out between me and the other guy. He had two lines of people, and they'd roll the ball out about 10 feet in front of us, roll it out, and the first person that dove and got to the ball first won, and the other guy had to run or do steps.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was an emphasis. Like, a loose ball is our ball. A loose ball doesn't mean the other team is – they don't have a right to it. We don't have a right to it. We have the right to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our ball. Any loose ball is our ball. And I tell you, the teams that I do really admire – and teams that I love to watch sometimes are the teams that put out the ultimate effort. Like, I'll tell you a guy. I'll give you a guy right off the bat. Hudson Smith. Mm. Hudson Smith, when he played
at
Beloit.
Much that whole family, right?
The whole family, yes. The whole family. It comes from the family. When you're one of,
I saw it with the girls at St. John's, too.
Listen, when you're one of 30 kids, you got to fight for everything you can get. But Hudson Smith dove for there's times he dove and he didn't have to. But he dove for every loose ball, and that was contagious because then other teammates would start doing that sometimes. Not everybody would do it, but because he was always the first one to get on the floor. I don't know how many times. I remember one game, I bet you he got six more possessions for his team. I know at least six. There was one night, I don't know, it was with Sacred Heart of Southeast there playing in Beloit, and I talked with Ryan Islett, the head coach, after the game, and I said, my goodness, I said, I don't know, I don't keep track of this stat, but I don't know how many possessions you earned because Hudson Smith dove on the floor and saved the ball or got a tie-up or got the arrow or just absolutely just the amazing hustle and effort and fortitude and tenaciousness and competitive spirit Hudson Smith played with was infectious. And every team needs that. And I think if a team doesn't have – now, Hudson Smith's an extreme because he was – I've never seen anybody like him in high school sports all the years. But there, hopefully you have at least one kid on your team, at least one, if not more – hopefully you have more than one, that when the chips are down and there's a ball loose and the game's tight, you're not worried about hurting your hand or your ankle or your arm or your shoulder. You're worried about one thing, and that is you don't overthink it and you say, that ball's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mentality. That's an attitude. And I think younger kids are trying – obviously, younger kids have to develop that. I know I had to develop that. The other thing you have to develop is learn how to, you know, be willing to take a charge, which I will say that puts you in even more risk than diving for a loose ball typically. Be willing to take a charge to help your team win. You see that – listen, the best teams in college in the Final Four, the teams that make it to the championship games, the teams that go to the NBA Finals, I'm going to tell you there's a few common traits that they all have. One, they get after it. They're going to go after loose balls. Two, they're willing to do whatever the team needs to win. They have the right role players along with a star or two. They're not full of stars. They have the right players. And then it's team chemistry. Team chemistry. And I believe that ties all together. If you've got a guy or guys or guy or gal or gals on your team willing to get on the floor to take a charge, willing to hit the floor to take a charge, willing to get on the floor for a loose ball, I think that does help you with team camaraderie and chemistry and also is infectious in a good way for the rest of the team. And thus, you get more loose balls. Thus, you force the turnover by taking a charge. Thus, you get the ball in more possessions. Thus, your chances of scoring more points. Thus, your chances of winning the game go up. It sounds simple, but it isn't simple. And there's a reason the Suns and the Bucks are the last two teams standing. You look at their role players. I mean, I look at Mikal Bridges. I look at Cam Johnson. I look at Cameron Payne. I look at Saric before he got hurt. I look at the Bucks. I look at Connaughton. And I look at Bobby Portis Jr. And I look at anybody that's a role player. And these guys are getting on the floor. They're getting after it. And there's a reason why they are where they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you – I never mastered the get in front and take the charge.
No, me neither.
That's not something I did, but I did
– I took a couple, and I was, like, shocked when I got it.
Yeah, but I was – if the ball was on the floor, I was willing to go after it, right? Or if the ball's going out of bounds, we can keep it. I was willing to put my body on the line. I did it actually once at Norton when they had the short sideline in their old grade school gym, and the padding was only, like, probably about 4 feet wide. I went and saved one on the baseline. My hip ran into the wall, and it hurt for days. But I was like, this is our possession. We're going to keep it, right? You have to have a little bit of that mentality, I think. If you're not just as if you're anybody, I feel like. But if you're not like a superstar that's scoring 20 points a game for your team, then you want to contribute in some way, right? And figure out how you can do that. So I wasn't afraid to go after the ball, right? Now, again, taking charges, I was a little bit nervous about having some big old boy knock me down, maybe hitting my head or landing the wrong way or something like that. But you do. You have to have guys that are willing to make those sacrifices. And you talked about Hudson. I mean, Gabby was at the top of that list for St. John's as well. And I know that Coach Christine would say the same. And a lot of coaches in the league would be like, that's just a different breed. Like, they don't do that.
And those teams they were on were very successful.
Exactly.
That wasn't a coincidence. And the other thing I'll say, too, is, you know, I've coached youth sports for, you know, many years since my oldest was, you know, 5, 6 years old, whatever the case may be. And I'll tell you this, and I think most coaches listening would totally agree with this, is that the biggest thing that drives a coach nuts is not that you missed a layup that you could have made. You know, it's not that you missed a free throw in a crunch time situation. It's not that you, you know, you got caught up on a pick on a pick and roll and the guy had a wide open shot. It's about lack of effort. If you are not willing to give a full effort, like if you get beat off the dribble one time badly and then you let it happen again, well, you're going to go to the bench and you're going to sit for a little while because you should be competitive enough to go, I ain't letting that happen again. That was embarrassing. And so you put somebody in that hopefully does move their feet and gets in front of somebody. That to people would say it's either a lack of focus or a lack of effort, or maybe the other guard is just unbelievably fast and so you just can't get in front of them. And if that's the case, well, you got to go to somebody else anyway. But a lack of effort. There's a loose ball right in front of the bench. It don't have to even be in front of the bench. Wherever it's on the floor, and you see a kid on your team slowly reaching for it while he's still bending over like he's picking flowers out of a garden, and two guys on the other team go sliding 10 feet all the way to the ball. You know where your butt's going to be typically? On the bench with a little talking to, because that's called lack of effort. That's called you're not willing to put it out for the team. We're a team. We got to do what's best for the team. The best thing to do on the team is to what? Provide the best effort. If you're tired, tell me. We'll get you out. We'll put somebody else in. And I said that when I coached baseball too. Like, if you're not running hard down the first base line, then you're going to be out. I mean, how hard is it? In baseball, you stand around all the time. Don't tell me you're tired. All you got to do is run 90 feet. Run 90 feet hard, and you have plenty of time to rest once you get to first base. I mean, of all the sports where it drives me nuts, a lack of effort, it's baseball. There is no excuse other than you're completely bored and completely lacking focus. But still, the effort should be there, man. The effort should be there. And it just – it is very frustrating as a coach. Like basketball, watching a kid not hustle down the floor – after he turns the ball over, hangs his head, and then mopes coming down the floor. And then you give up a layup because he doesn't hustle back or she doesn't hustle back. That is what's going to draw the ire of coaches. You can't control if every shot's going to go in. You maybe can't control the scheme and the strategy of a particular play you're trying to defend. But what you can control, we've always talked about this. You know what you can control as a player? And the same thing as a coach, but as a player and particularly, is effort and attitude. Those two things you can control, effort and attitude. And if you don't have either one, you are a cancer to your team. If you do not have the right attitude and you don't provide the best effort, then you are part of a problem. And your team's better off with you on the bench or with you not even on the team, or you just got to figure it out and get better and get out of your doldrums, whether it be, you know, you're lazy or whether it's just a bad attitude. I always think that when you're lazy, you automatically have a bit of a wrong attitude. I think they tie hand in hand. I don't know if anybody agrees with that. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing that upset me anytime I've coached, and I'm talking lower levels, I'm no college coach or high school coach, but it was always you play hard. You play hard. You play hard, you give it your best effort. And you know what? If we give it our best effort as a team, we'll let the chips fall where they may. The other team beats us, fine. We gave it our best. We can live with that. If we lose 8-2 and they're the better team and we gave it all we could, that's fine. But we lose a game 4-3 because we're lollygagging and not running hard to second on a steal attempt, or we're not watching our coach and we're lollygagging from second to third and we should have been home scoring a run, or if I'm lollygagging and give up a wide open three because I'm upset on the other end of the floor, or I'm tired, but you still got to suck it up and get down there. And then, you know, if you need out, you ask the coach to be out. That you can control. Attitude and effort you can always control, no matter what player you are, girl or boy, and no matter what sport. Those two things you control. And coaches cannot control that at all. They can try,
yeah,
but they can't control effort and attitude. They can try to instill it in practices, like I talked about with the drill where you roll the ball out and you dive for the ball and the loser has to run or do this. You can try to instill it. But at the end of the day, coaches can't make you have the right attitude, and coaches can't make you provide the fullest effort. They can't.
No.
It's up to you individually.
Yeah, you got
to
do it.
That helps then form the team that you may have.
Yeah, well, and you got to do it yourself where the coach has the right attitude himself, right?
Because absolutely.
I know a certain team where the coach doesn't have a good attitude, and it's like that can funnel down and be a bad thing for your team too. Now, I'm not putting that all on coaches, right? But what I'm saying is some of that can be a reflection of the coach.
Oh, so absolutely.
If your coach doesn't have the great attitude, then you got to figure it out for yourself, right? You got to figure out how this is going to make us and myself and my team better, right? Yeah. I got triggered when you said the key is play hard. That's that dang chart that the
Bruce Weber's chart.
I said, now don't be charting everything when you're losing eight games in a row. Say, oh, we played hard.
Right.
Fortunately, at the group level you coach, you don't have to.
I don't have to worry
about that. Meet with media about a play hard.
I also don't get paid like Bruce Weber does either. Unfortunately, I would love.
But you have to have the right attitude and the right effort, and that's going to take you. Again, we talk about things that convert from sports to life.
Absolutely.
Right? The right effort, the right attitude are going to take you way further than
absolutely.
Oh, I made a mistake at my job today.
Right.
Because I.
Yeah.
For instance, I forgot to put an ad in or something, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't play for two straight.
Are you going to feel sorry for yourself?
No, I'm going to go ahead and put that back in and give better effort the next time, right?
Yeah.
And keep putting the right things into your craft, no matter what it is.
Yeah, you aren't going to feel sorry for yourself. You're going to say, you know what? I just won't let that happen again.
Yeah.
And that's called determination, and it all ties together. Effort, attitude, determination.
I do like that quote, though.
I do,
it's
too.
On the other side of
heart. On the other side of heart.
Yeah.
We always said what's on the other... In order to get to where we want, it's on the other side of hard. I love that quote. I think it's great. Richard Sherman's in the news. He was released yesterday following his arrest on Wednesday morning. Of course, Richard Sherman is a cornerback. He's now a free agent, which now is going to be tough for him to find a job, I think. And you start to wonder what's going on with Richard Sherman. I have to admit, the first thing I think about is he's had concussion, CTE, who knows? He obviously has some mental health issues right now. Richard Sherman was intoxicated and threatened to commit suicide during a confrontation with family members before he was arrested on Wednesday morning. Audio of the 911 call is believed to be from Sherman's wife, Ashley Moss, and helps explain the events that led to the cornerback's arrest. The caller identifying herself as Ashley Sherman, said Sherman, Richard Sherman, was acting drunk and belligerent and was threatening to kill himself. Sherman was displaying aggressive behavior and was sending text messages to people saying he's going to hang himself. During the call, police were asked not to shoot, as Sherman told the caller he would fight the police if they arrived. He was released on conditions and was not held on bail yesterday. He is a free agent, Sherman's lawyer was successful in his plea for immediate release after citing Sherman's lack of criminal history, his achievements in the National Football League, his work in the community and with charities. And the state is not asking for a burglary charge against Sherman, as it was downgraded to a charge of criminal trespass, which is a misdemeanor. What's important about this whole thing is that Sherman no longer facing any felony charges, according to his lawyer. What's most important is that Richard Sherman didn't take his life. That's what's most important.
Absolutely.
And that he didn't hurt anybody else. That's what's more important. Richard Sherman's a very smart dude, man. He went to Stanford. I mean, you don't go to Stanford and graduate without being smart.
Mm-hmm.
He's a smart dude. He's very intelligent, very intellectual. He's been part of the players' union before in regards to representing the players themselves at the bargaining table or talking with the union head. And so this is very uncharacteristic of Richard Sherman, and it makes you wonder what's going on. And, of course, if you want to jump to conclusions, how many concussions has he had? How many shots to the head has he taken? And is this CTE already kicking in for the guy? I mean, he's played for a while. He plays a position that you don't think would be as likely to have as many concussions, but different people have different situations. I mean, some guys could possibly have CTE from 3 concussions. Some could have from 15. Jay Cutler, I read a story recently about him. Listen to this. Jay Cutler, quarterback, remember him with the Broncos and with the Bears and other teams? He said, he's 38, and he said, if I get the 80, I'll think it's a modern-day miracle. And he's doing all kinds of preventative stuff after his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he had at least 15 concussions. Okay, so he thinks that it's inevitable. He's going to have the issues with the brain and the CTE and everything else. So he's eating certain stuff, taking certain oils to preventive maintenance is what he's trying to do. I don't know if this is the case of Richard Sherman. It's purely speculative, and you don't actually know until they've deceased, and then you study their brain if it's donated for research. But the bottom line is that Richard Sherman has something really bad happening in his life, whether it's self-induced himself or if there's other people that have contributed to it. But the bottom line is when a guy's talking about threatening to kill himself, about hanging himself, he's drunk, he's belligerent, he talks about fighting the cops, that sounds to me like a guy that really doesn't care about the consequences to himself. And that is scary. And I've talked about this for a long time, and I'll continue to beat the drum until I'm probably dead. And that is, mental health is a major issue in society. And it is not just for regular Joe Schmoes and Does. It is for athletes, for actors, actresses, celebrities, and for Dusty, and for me, and for people that are poor, for people that are middle class, people that are rich. There is no discrimination in regards to mental health. It afflicts people. You can have all the money in the world. Richard Sherman, I'm sure, does. He isn't a happy guy, obviously. Something's wrong. Something's wrong, and I hope he gets the help that he needs, and I'm just thankful that nothing bad happened to where he was killed by police or that he killed himself. Hopefully he gets the help he needs, and I'm glad that he didn't hurt anybody either. But what a really scary story coming out of the camp of Richard Sherman.
Yeah, it was. Well, and then, you know, when it first comes out, everybody's jumping to conclusions and saying this and that, but when you've actually had a time to step back and actually understand what happened, very fortunate that he didn't take his own life and that he's still here today.
Absolutely.
That's the best I can say about it.
Breaking news here. After spending 10 days in Las Vegas preparing for the Olympics, Cleveland's Kevin Love is withdrawing from Team USA. He won't travel to Tokyo. He is still returning to full form for a right calf injury that kept him out. Some people would say big deal because a lot of people said he shouldn't have been on the team anyway. To me, he's a role player, a veteran, a guy that's been there, done that. So now you're short a couple guys now. And now all of a sudden things start to be unraveling there. Also, big news, of course, tonight is the big premiere, or probably there was already a premiere, but tonight Space Jam is at the Beloit Cinema, Song Valley Cinema Beloit. LeBron James and the Looney Tunes, Bugs and everybody. So if you want to go see the new Space Jam, LeBron, go ahead. Send me that direct deposit for that plug, would you please, LeBron? Thank you. Awesome. Him and I at Secret Kind is our Fitbits.
Yeah.
So the new Space Jam's out. So there's a sports-tied celebrity situation there. I hope they get his son back. That's the premise of the whole thing. His son gets kidnapped. Tom Brady played reportedly with a torn MCL last year. Well, that makes Chiefs fans feel better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes you feel great.
Guy who couldn't move, plus he had torn MCL, and we still couldn't sack him or get to the quarterback. That's super awesome. Just add to the legend of Tom Brady. And finally, the British Open is underway, and let me see if I can update you on the scoreboard here. Colin Morikawa was leading and still is. He hasn't played yet today. He's 9-under through the first round. Jordan Spieth had a great round yesterday, and he is 2-under today through four holes, so he's 7-under. And Lewis Oosthuizen is 7-under, and a couple of other players are at 6-under. So Justin Spieth and Colin Morikawa, a couple of Americans atop the leaderboard at Royal St. George Golf Course in the British Open, round two, going on as we speak. Anything else to share before we let everybody go, Dustin?
I don't think so.
All right. Based on as long as things are going okay technically on our end of things, we hope to have a live remote tonight at the Lincoln County Fair in Sylvan Grove from 6 to 8. So if you're going to be down there, say hi to Dusty, and we'll go from there. And love you see at the Lincoln County Fair, and then we'll see you at the Mitchell County Fair and the Osmond County Fairs in the upcoming weeks. Have a great weekend, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.